Welcome to the first episode of Social Work Calling, a podcast from Union University School of Social Work. I'm Todd Stanfield, and I'm the Dean of the School of Social Work and the host for this podcast. We're excited to kick off this series by exploring the impact our graduates are making in their communities. In this inaugural episode, we'll be talking with two incredible alumni of our MSW program, Esperanza Gonzalez and Aaron Slater. We'll dive into their professional journeys, how their faith has shaped their work, and how their time here at Union has prepared them for the important roles they play today. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome into the Union University Social Work Podcast. Today, we are talking to two of our graduates and also two of the members of the staff here at Union University. And we're going to talk to them a little bit about their experience with social work, their experience in our Masters of Social Work program, MSW for short, and also their work that they do here and how social work helps them to do that work and how the Lord has walked with them through that whole process of social work education and now the work that they do. But before we get into it, let me first introduce them, and then we're going to do a little icebreaker question just to lighten the mood a bit. So we have Esperanza Gonzalez, who is the Director of Disability Services here in the Office of Disability Services.
Correct.
And we have Aaron Slater, who's the director for the Center for Academic Success. Is that correct? The question I want to pose to you here is, we just transitioned technically into fall, although we're having weird West Tennessee weather like we always have. It's rainy, it's warm, still feels like summer. But what is your favorite thing about fall?
Go ahead, Esperanza.
Okay, I think for me, it's just the beautiful leaves that I see on the concrete when I'm walking around campus. And it's just a reminder that sometimes letting go can be beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Oh, see, oh, mine's not as poetic.
That's so good. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's
good job, Esperanza. Yeah. I love fall for, obviously, the look of the leaves. I like the cooler, crisp air, and then like an SNL throwback of sweater weather.
Yeah.
I like to be able to wear cozy sweaters and the crisp air. I like that.
Do you find yourself, or either both of you, do you find yourself pulling the sweaters out too soon?
I'm wearing one today.
Like you're trying to push it, like you're just really trying to force it.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. Yeah, I have to be honest. Like, I love that crisp feeling in the air, like in the morning, but I would be dishonest if I didn't say football is my favorite thing about autumn, because it comes back. But my sister has an October birthday. I have a November birthday, so growing up as a kid, September, October is the beginning of the straight run through Christmas. It's the fun season. Mm-hmm. So I love autumn.
Yes, all right.
Where I want to start with is, first, both of you telling me a little bit about what you do at Union, what your job is, what you do in that role.
Okay, I'll go first then. Hey, everyone. My name is Esperanza Gonzalez, and I serve as the director for the Office of Disability Services. The goal of the Office of Disability Services, and I'm an office of one, so my goal is to ensure that students with disabilities receive equal access to all academic and social opportunities through accessibility and inclusivity during their college experience.
And I am the director of the Center for Academic Success, so we oversee a lot of things. We oversee peer tutoring and study labs, as well as test proctoring for all students who actually have ADA accommodations through Esperanza's office. We also work with undecided and or deciding majors, we like to call them, because they will decide at some point. And then we work with students who are on, especially freshmen, who are on academic probation. And then we also, are one of our biggest things that we oversee is the Keystone program, which just supports freshmen students transitioning from high school to college and helping them to do that. So I'd say, in short, hopefully we're helping students become better learners.
Okay. All right. I mean, in many ways, you guys share a common goal, that you're basically supporting students. And your two offices are only one of many offices we have at Union that support students in a variety of ways. But first of all, thank you guys for the work you do, and appreciate you in doing that. A question that social workers and social work students get asked probably a billion times, right, in their lifetime, is how they got into social work, what that process was like. So tell me the story about how you arrived at social work.
I'll let you go first again, Esperanza.
Okay. For me, I truly believe that it was a providential thing. I moved to the U.S. when I was 15. My family and I, we immigrated from Mexico to Tennessee in 2004. And you can imagine, as an immigrant, not knowing the English language, I already faced a barrier. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved, I was 15, so it was my ESL teacher, my English as a second language teacher. She was my saving grace that will pull me out of the classroom to give me a more individualized education. And later on, I knew that I wanted to do for others what she was doing for me. I just didn't know what it was because I didn't want to be a teacher. At least that's what I thought. But I wanted to make an impact by just being an advocate and just provide resources just like she did for me. And so I came to Union and I majored in nursing. And later on, I found out that nursing was not for me. So I ended up changing my major to psychology. I never heard social work before. So I was like, my mother wanted me to be a psychologist. So I was like, I guess nursing didn't work. I'll follow what my mother advised now. And I loved the psychology program here at Union. So I graduated with a psychology degree and I ended up staying here at Union. I started working as a secretary / student success advocate in the Vocario Center. And while working there, I loved helping students develop their resumes and their interviewing skills and advocating for them, finding resources around campus. And so after my first year working here, I discovered the School of Social Work here at Union. And the mission of the School of Social Work resonated with my beliefs and my gifts, which was, I think it said something along the lines of equipping competent, compassionate, and effective individuals to be transformative leaders who enhance human being and promote social justice. And now I get to see God's hands leading me to where I am now, which is working in disability services and being an advocate for students that need support.
That's great. So your story kind of came full circle in that, yes, that ESL teacher was all about supporting students and absolutely giving them the help they needed. And so that's what you're doing now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It is.
Erin, what about you?
I felt, when I talked to Esperanza the other day, I felt really bad about my, I feel like I stumbled into social work, to be honest. I had zero interest in social work. Mm-hmm. My undergrad was in counseling with a minor in behavioral science. I always thought I wanted to be a counselor, but I also knew I wanted to work with college students. After working with college students for a while in residence life, I realized that counselor would not be a good fit for me because I need also a lot of wins, and I like to do life with students more than just in an office for an hour a week. And I got a degree in higher ed and student development, knowing that eventually I want to get my licensure in counseling just so I can have the skills. I have always been a lifelong learner. I want to learn. I love going to school. I don't always like doing all the work that it requires, but I do love learning. And I had gotten my job here at Union. They did not have a counseling program, so the next best thing was social work. And I really was honestly opposed because all I knew of social work was DCS, mm-hmm, and or like community development, mm-hmm, or working with homeless. And mm-hmm, all three of those things I did not feel equipped for or called to. And so I was like, I still want to learn. And I'm so glad that I did, because what it did is it really opened up the world of social work. And it's so much more impressive than I knew it to be. And I think a lot of other students now that I work with who are deciding majors, they don't realize how broad social work is, how many areas that social work can be integrated with and or impactful towards. I actually stumbled into it more than anything, or reluctantly went into it, but now that I have this new understanding about the work that you can do in all different areas, like legislature and hospitals and law enforcement, there's just so many places where social work is an important piece of the work that people do. So that's my story. I'm glad I did it. I learned so much about the field just by taking a step of interest and wanting to learn.
Great. Yeah, you know, I find that's in a lot of people's stories that we might describe it as stumbling into. But then when you look backward, you can see how your steps have been ordered to be in that place. And just for our listeners' benefit, Aaron mentioned DCS, and so that's the Department of Children's Services.
Yes.
Yeah, here in Tennessee. So in other states, it's called different things.
Right.
But that's usually the first thing people think of when they think of social workers is child welfare, right? That's the first thing, and that's definitely part of what we do. I worked in that area, and it's great work, but that is only a small part of what we do as social workers. Talk to me a little bit about how the MSW program helped to develop you as a social worker, what that experience was like going through the program and how it helped you grow.
For me, I think, again, because it was a whole new world that I was just learning about, I think it gave me a whole new way to look at all the factors that might be impacting a person's life. I think in counseling, while they try to ask about family and history and things like that, it gave me a new lens of like the biopsychosocial component, where some of the things that might be impacting them might be biological, some of it might be psychological, some of it might be sociological. Is that a word?
Yes, yes, most definitely.
And then also looking at things from the meso, the micro, meso, and macro levels as well, and how all of those pieces were such complex beings. And I think it just helped me look at things and individuals or situations more holistically. And it's been a good lens to consider. I think I have so much more grace for people now and patience, tolerance, perhaps compassion when I am using all of those lenses.
Yeah. Esperanza, what about you?
For me, I learned that we must meet people where they are, which is sometimes very challenging, just because we already know the path that they need to take. But I feel like sometimes we can just provide them with the resources and just trust them that they will do the right thing. But we can just be the bridges to those resources, and we just have to give them the space to take those first steps towards those resources, which sometimes is really hard as social workers. And then I remembered in one of my MSW classes, I recall Professor Virginia Schwinth talk about the importance of setting boundaries. That's one of the things that I love the most about the social work. They really highlight the importance of self-care and boundary settings, because social work is hard, and just working with people that have all these problems is just very draining. Learning to have a work-life balance from the get-go, since you're a student, I think that's necessary. In my current role, I have been able to work on polishing this skill. I'm still working on that. A good example of setting boundaries will be just prioritizing your time and your own needs. Just the simple task of scheduling your lunch break on your calendar so that other people don't take over your calendar. That's just a small little gesture of what setting a boundary will look like, or getting up to stretch and drink water or use a restroom. Boundaries are necessary, and sometimes I feel like we neglect our own bodies in order to help others, but we have to take care of ourselves first.
Yeah, I'm glad you got that from our program, because what we want to train and equip is sustainable social workers. And as Aaron talked about, like, you learn to develop compassion by looking at people's full story, that broader, we call it several things. We call it person and environment. We call it biopsychosocial, human behavior in the social environment, systems theory. It's all the same thing. Ecological perspective, just understanding that an individual is more than just what goes on with them. It's what goes on in their family and their community and all the influences that exist. And it's very easy, once you get that picture, to have that compassion, or at least I think it is. It helps you see it from a different perspective. But there has to be boundaries on that compassion, because what we call it in the profession when you end up burning out is you often develop compassion fatigue. Yeah, where you just lose that compassion because you're so burnt out. So being able to
to be a sustainable social worker is very important. And I got to confess, I'm the world's worst at skipping lunch. Not like I'm the worst because I'm just like, I'm too busy, but it makes no sense. Like you have to stop. And so the way I've arranged my office now, the next time you're by the office, you have to say, I have a little nook in the corner with a chair, like an easy chair that I can just go over. So now I make myself get up from my desk and will not eat my lunch at my desk. I have to go over
your
to
lunch
the little,
break corner.
That's right. The lunch break corner. That's right. Yes. That's right. So, All right. Talk to me a little bit about your walk with the Lord and how that's been a part of your development as a social worker, or even the work that you do here.
I believe Union University equips students not only intellectually but also spiritually, and during my graduate years in this social work program, Micah 6:8 was our go-to verse social work students. So now when I am faced with challenging times in my current position, I still find myself going back to that verse that says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." So when I think of what is good, what is the right thing to do in this situation, I remind myself of the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5:22-23 that says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, which sometimes is so hard to do. I believe this is how the MSW program challenged me to grow in my walk with the Lord.
Esperanza is so much more articulate than I am. My first response was like, I feel like my walk with the Lord grew because I was balancing a lot of things and learning a lot of things, and things that would potentially produce compassion fatigue. For me, I think even as a, sorry, I know this is not an Enneagram podcast, but for anybody who does understand it, I'm an Enneagram 1. So it also, just who I am wants to make things better and right and fix injustices. And so I grew, I think, to understand the heart of the Lord more when I was being exposed to all of the injustices. I feel like, oh my goodness, I was an adult student or an adult going back to college or graduate work, and I felt like, where have I been my whole life? There are so many things I didn't know about, so many injustices I didn't know about. And so I think my walk with the Lord changed in that I felt a heavier burden for brokenness and things that needed to be wrong, things that needed to be made right. And knowing that's, I would assume Jesus's heart as well. Like, he grieves the brokenness in this world. And then I do think also it helped me to love the other more than I ever had before as well. Just knowing you can have your own biases, you can have your own perspectives of certain things until you get more information and realize, oh, you can't just pull yourself up from your bootstraps, or, oh, you can't just go do the things that we have the privilege to do. Others might not have that same privilege. So I think it also, again, I know I keep mentioning compassion, but I just grew to love people who are different than me, and even folks who might be in opposition to me, because of a deeper understanding.
Yeah, that's great. And Esperanza, what you were sharing about the fruits of the Spirit, I think it relates to being a sustainable social worker in that it's not the fruits of me, right? It's the fruits of the Spirit. And while we know, like, there's some great social workers out there that may not be people of faith, but I don't know how they do it, honestly, because very quickly when you develop that compassion and you see all the injustices that are in the world, right? And the mission of social work is so broad.
Right.
You feel like, oh, I got to be a part
it's
of
all the things.
Yeah, like fixing all of this. When I was an intern in my own MSW program at the University of Alabama, and I'm not going to remember the specific scripture passage, chapter and verse, but there's basically a passage in the Old Testament that says, the battle's not yours, but the Lord's. Mm-hmm. And she wrote that in a Bible that she gave me when I graduated. And that's one of the things I always try to remember is that this is, I'm just a small part of a much larger story, and God uses me as he sees fit. And I cannot produce all of those characteristics of the fruits of the Spirit unless I stay plugged into him. Mm-hmm. And when you reach the end of yourself, because sometimes we make the mistake of trying to do it on our own.
Absolutely.
And through our own. And so once you reach the end of yourself and hit a wall, which you're going to do as a social worker, because there's times where you just get out of sync or what have you, then you realize, Lord, like, I've got to lean on you to do this. I have to depend on you. And that's really the only way that I could ever be successful as a social worker.
Yes.
And yeah, it is the, all those injustices that, you know, and that's part of what we do in our master's program, is we expose you to things that you may not have heard about before that are going on in the world that people don't often know about. And social justice, that word has got a bad rap in some Christian circles. But I think when people understand that there truly is, there truly are some justice issues out there that, that really need to be addressed. Yeah, but it's a lot. It is a lot to carry as a social worker. How do you find your social work skills and maybe a social work perspective useful in the work that you currently do?
I think for me, again, I work with students, and we work with most of them on an individual basis, which I love, because we can get to hear their stories. We can look at them more holistically. And so I feel like the skills that I've gotten from the MSW program have helped me do a more thorough and or effective connection to investigation of, if that's the right term. But
right.
Just knowing our students more individually and in meaningful ways. And then for the purpose of helping them be better learners, be better humans, be better citizens, caretakers of one another.
Yeah, most definitely.
For me, I would say that the MSW program reminded me the importance of providing compassionate service and having critical thinking skills. Because like you said, Erin, sometimes students come to you and they need answers right away, but some situations are not just black and white. You have to do your research, and that takes time. And as we know, sometimes we want things now, but having those critical thinking skills, it's very important. And it's okay to say, I don't have the answer right now. I'll get back to you, or expect to hear from me as soon as we get this sorted out, right? And we were talking about social justice. The MSW program highlights the importance of fostering compassionate service while promoting that social justice, right? For me, I think the program challenged me to stand up for what is right, even when it is uncomfortable. Sometimes we have to stand up for the right thing to do. And sometimes we want to please others. We want to love on others. Sometimes when we say yes to someone, we're saying no to someone else. And for me, that's something that I'm working on right now. Those critical thinking skills. Yes.
Yeah, I think as social workers, sometimes we make the mistake that we think there's always a perfect compromise, that we can walk away leaving both parties happy and there's a win. And that's a great idea. And sometimes it does work, but sometimes you're right. Somebody walks away disappointed and somebody walks away more affirmed. So that's really a challenge. I imagine, as both of you were sharing about that, that what a student initially presents themselves to your office for is rarely the full story, right? Like, so the grades are not doing great. Maybe they're, this coming up this week is, or actually
progress
tomorrow,
reports.
Progress reports, right? So it's early on. And those, I think when I first came here, those were more like midterm reports. And now they've just moved earlier in the semester. So it lets the student know, and people involved with the student, maybe the student's falling behind or what have you. And of course, there's all the common answers of, you just need to study more and you need to try harder. I like to say try differently, because trying harder rarely works. Because in most cases, they already are trying really hard. So what are some of the things that you maybe see that are not the original problem, meaning, okay, they're not doing well in classes? What are some other things? Occasionally, are they worried? Because this is what I hear when I'm advising students. They're worried about what's going on at back home, like a mom and dad maybe having problems, or they have a sibling who's sick.
Or they lost somebody significant in their family recently, or that's a good question. You've mentioned a couple of them.
Yeah, or sometimes the students overcompromise. They say yes to so many things, and then they leave their academics till the last thing. So like prioritizing, I see that's one of the biggest issue that I see, just like setting boundaries and prioritizing your time.
And freshmen, this is the first time many of them have had to live with different people that they haven't had their parents waking them up and or making sure they're on schedule for all the things. There's a lot of new freedoms, and they just have not found their rhythm yet. Or mm-hmm. they don't even, until they get the progress reports, don't see, oh, this is, I'm here for school too.
Right, right.
So it's just an adjustment period, especially for freshmen.
Yeah. So the welcome week for new freshmen seems almost too much. Like our student life folks do a great job putting it on, but when my daughter went through it 2 years ago, she was like, the number of options of things you can get involved mm-hmm. with at Union are overwhelming in
right.
a good way. But yeah, so most of those things that may sometimes crowd out the academics are not bad things. They're all good things, mm-hmm. but you can have too much of a, of
yeah,
a good thing.
Thing.
So helping
yes.
them set those boundaries in their time, just mm-hmm. like we were talking about social workers need to do, mm-hmm. Students have to learn that as
yeah.
well, right? How to prioritize things.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about your offices and what you wish more students knew about your office, like the work you do or how you can help them or anything like that?
I will say a lot of times students come to my office and they're like, I think I have ADHD, but I'm not sure. Is it possible to get a diagnosis here? And the answer is yes. Counseling services is available here for our students and they're here to assist them. Also, privacy. I think students are hesitant to reach out to us because they think that if they already have a documented disability and if they register with Office of Disability Services, they assume that disability is going to appear on their transcripts mm-hmm. or their grade report or their diplomas. But the truth is that privacy is our top priority. A documented disability will not show up on mm-hmm. anything. All that students will receive is just reasonable accommodations, mm-hmm. and that's it. So that's,
and just to even add for yours, what I've seen, our students don't realize that they don't even have to disclose it to every professor.
No.
They can use their accommodations in specific
yes.
classes.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, so like looking at one class, and I probably don't need it
right.
in this class
absolutely.
Because of the way it's structured. I've seen
yes.
the syllabus. I've gone to a couple of lectures. I've taken a test or what have you. But
absolutely.
Then this other one, yeah, okay.
I'm going to use
yeah.
my time and a half because
yeah.
it will be helpful for
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
right.
That makes
yes.
sense.
And I
right.
like to remind them, you're not cheating the system mm-hmm. just because you're not sharing your letter of accommodations with every single professor. Mm-hmm. You get to pick and choose where you need those accommodations.
Right, right.
So I just wish that students will know that it's okay to pick and choose.
So before we get to Aaron's answer, I want to lean into that
yeah.
just a little bit. So what do you think, besides the fact, okay, I may not need the accommodation here, what do you think's at work there where they might decide, oh, I really don't want to use it in this class? I get that it might be a class where they're like, I don't need it,
mm-hmm.
but do you think sometimes it might be a professor that they're a little uneasy about presenting those to?
It could be. Sometimes
yeah.
it's just the fear of approaching the faculty members.
Mm-hmm.
And what we advise students to do is we can start by just sharing the letter by email. Share
mm-hmm.
the letter by email and then mm-hmm. see if you can meet with them after class
mm-hmm.
and share the letter mm-hmm. in person and
mm-hmm.
just let them know.
Mm-hmm.
I email you my accommodations
mm-hmm.
and I just wanted you to connect
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
document with a face.
Right.
You don't have to go into their office. You can just wait until class
right.
if you're afraid of that specific
right.
faculty
yeah.
member.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe the fear sometimes prevents students from
yeah.
being vulnerable with yeah. faculty members.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, Erin?
Mm-hmm. For me, I wish students knew that the CAS is not just for struggling students. Like,
mm-hmm.
you, the minute you want to learn more or be a little bit better, I tell people during Welcome Week where they're getting too much information, we have students who are B students who just want to be A students, but also I'd want them to know, please come earlier rather
mm-hmm.
than later. We are not great at helping you be when this is your last-ditch effort. There needs to be time for recovery mm-hmm. or to develop skills or to implement new practices in your life or in the classroom or both. So it's better to come earlier rather than later because that's the best way to be able to get the skills or the resources to recover.
Likewise, as you think about faculty members, maybe something you wish they knew more about your office or maybe how they might approach situations that you deal with, what's some advice you would have for faculty?
Okay, I think this is necessary to mention. Disability rights are civil rights. So from voting to parking to accommodations in academic settings, The Americans with Disabilities Act is a law that we must abide by just to be in compliance with the law. And this federal law mandates that universities must provide reasonable accommodations. In other words, if a student reaches out to the faculty member and shares that letter of accommodations, instructors must provide accommodations to students with disabilities. This may include extended testing time or a distraction-reduced testing environment. In these cases, it has been determined, not by me, but by professionals such as medical providers or psychologists, that students' disabilities hinders them or hinders their functional abilities during a testing situation. That will be my main thing that I would like to mention.
Yeah, and I already know the answer to this, but I'll just say what I know to be true, and then you can respond to that. I know that there are faculty that sometimes say, I want to see the documentation. Mm. And part of what I said in front of a greater faculty meeting with all of our faculty present when I was talking about discipleship and discipleship with students is I said, I know Esperanza. She went through our program. She has done due diligence on knowing whether or not that student needs accommodation. She's a professional. So if she tells you that they need accommodations, they do. And most of the people in the room were nodding their head, but there were a couple that were like eye rolling or what have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's tough. And I can see where students can feel a little intimidated talking to professors. But as you said, it's their right. And it's really a justice issue.
Yes.
And they can talk with the professor about that. And I promise you, even the professors, particularly here at Union, I've worked at large state schools. It's different here. And even though we all have our own biases and things like that, I would say the vast majority of our professors are very approachable.
Right. Absolutely. Right. They are. Way more approachable than our students believe them to be.
That's right. So my fellow faculty try to be more approachable. Try to be a little softer. Maybe mention in your, even though we mention in the syllabus disability services, maybe also in class, just say, hey, if do not hesitate. If you have a, to
Let
come forward
know.
To me, this is part, just something that's affirming, that gives permission. That's really important.
And I will also like to mention that the importance of confidentiality. It is best not to discuss exam accommodations with other students in a class setting. That will be illegal, right? Confidentiality is a legal concern, and a student's right to privacy concerning their disability is protected by federal law.
Yeah. And I think in higher ed, some people are a little bit more aware of confidentiality just because of FERPA. But I find in general, as social workers, we tend to be more concerned about confidentiality than other professions do sometimes. All right, Erin, what about your office and what professors you wish professors knew a little bit more?
We love to support our students and our faculty, and I feel like we do that best when we have the help of the faculty. And here's how we can best support our students: if our faculty are paying attention to their strong students and shoulder tapping them and encouraging them to tutor that specific discipline. I know, so one of the departments that does such a great job, and we're so thankful for them, but I also have some of the best support from our office, is the nursing department. Every year they're looking at who are our outstanding students, and they go and talk to them and said, hey, would you ever consider being a tutor? There's also a lot of benefits for students to be tutors, because they learn the material more when you're having to explain it. So they're becoming stronger students while also helping their peers. They're getting paid. But then the department is able to thrive more because they can retain their students more because they're having the supports that they need. It's one thing to put out a call to all versus you've seen some of your stars. Right. Send them our way.
Right.
And if a student hears that you think highly of them and think they'd do a good job, they're also much more apt to do that. So I think I would love more departments to partner with us in that way. Because then you're guaranteed to have the support when your students need it, and students will do well. I'd also like to add, there's a thing that, and this is not for every student, but I think today's student is very different than they were maybe 10 to 20 years ago. And so if you've been teaching for a long time, there used to be a day when you could say to your class, this is a tough class to pass, or you will have to do these certain things in order to get an A in here. Back in the day, students would say, challenge accepted. Like, I will show you.
Right.
Today's student, I think, says, I believe you, because I get them in my class. And I've had a couple of faculty members, it's, oh no, did they say this in class? And I'll have 4, 5, 7, 8 from that class saying, I want to drop this. And then I have to give them the speech that you don't just run from hard things and that's not necessarily true. And just having to recover what I think in their intention is to encourage the student to work hard. But what I think it does or how it impacts today's student is, okay, I believe you. I better not do this.
Yeah, let me back out and let me drop this course now.
Let me do the thing that I'm guaranteed to do well in.
And so I guess part of what faculty could do is tell them, yes, this is going to be challenging, but here's how I'm going to help you. Here's what we're going to do each sort of along the way.
Yes.
I'm here to support you. There's also support from different offices on campus, et cetera. So not shying away from the fact that it's a challenge or might be a challenging
course. It should
course.
Be challenging.
That's right. Yeah.
It should be. Otherwise, you're not learning anything.
That's right. And for a lot of students, some of those math and science courses, and for others, it might be a literature class, right? That's different for every person. But yeah, I definitely see where students get intimidated to the point of, I'm going to tap out on this one. So something, when my mom was in school to be a teacher, and when she was going through her master's program, in most of her classes in the syllabus, you could contract for an A or a B. So there was like A level work you could do or B level work you could do. And y'all know how I feel about Bs. That I think that they're great. So I tell all of our new MSW students to embrace the B because students get really fixated sometimes getting that A rather than learning. But I've been thinking about that more, about bringing back contracting for Bs. Like in my research class, I've thought, hey, maybe they can do a little smaller paper for a B as opposed to an A. So there's probably different levels of challenge you could put in front of students. So that's something that faculty could think about. Let me get to this question, and then we'll go back and cover anything that I missed, because I'm sure I left out questions that I asked y'all about ahead of time that we'll need to cover back. But so you were both MSW students. And remind me when y'all graduated. Do you remember when you graduated?
What year it was? I graduated in 2012.
2012?
I think I was 2018.
2018. Okay.
Oh, I take it back. That was my bachelor's.
Okay, gotcha.
2017.
2017. Okay, yeah. I didn't specify graduating from what. But yeah, so y'all were just about a year apart there. We're hopeful that students that might be considering an MSW or BSW are listening to this podcast. So what's one piece of advice you would offer to a new MSW student?
You want to go?
I will say just do not be afraid to jump. Just take one step. Just one step. Don't look at all of the things that you have to do, all of the applications that you have to submit, your resume or like the cover letter or whatever you call it, the personal statement. Just focus on one thing at a time, because I believe that sometimes when we look at the big mountain, we're so afraid to climb it, right? So just one step at a time.
Good. That's good.
I would say connect with your cohort, people in your cohort quickly, because these are folks who you'll see the next year or two. I had to do mine in 3 years. If you did your undergrad here, you can do it in 1 year. And then, so you get some new folks, but there are some who stay pretty steady. And I was just very thankful for some of the other members of my cohort who I got to connect to, because you'll be doing group projects with them. They're a great resource to say, did you understand this the way that I did? And what are your thoughts here? And just to even continue the conversation outside of the classroom, it was fun to have those kind of connecting pieces. And then another recommendation or kind of piece of advice would be get a good internship. Make sure you lean into something that you are curious about and want to know more about. That's how I ended up in the job that I'm in right now. I actually knew I wanted to work with students. There aren't a ton in college level students. So again, my opportunities were smaller, but then I ended up working with the Keystone program for a whole year and loved it. And then here I am today. But then also I remember one of the other ladies in my program, she was middle-aged like me, and she knew she wanted to work with elderly folks, but then she ended up doing her internship with hospice. And I remember her telling the story in one of our classes where we're unpacking our internships, and she was telling the story of the first time she sat bedside by somebody as they were passing away. And just even when she was telling us the story, like, she had tears in her eyes, and she was saying, this is what I feel called to do. I never knew that. I never saw this coming. And just her experience in that moment changed her whole life, and mm-hmm. it like where the needs of the world met her heart that mm-hmm. God had put in her mm-hmm. met, and she found her calling
right.
through her
right.
internship. Yeah. So I would say yes. explore and try to find a good internship.
I would echo what Aaron said. Mm-hmm. Internships are so important. I also, thanks to my internship, I ended up in the Office of Disability Services because I just fell in love with working with people with different types of needs. Mm-hmm. And so embrace that internship, take time to do your research and see where is it that God wants you to be. And also the importance of networking while you're completing your master's mm-hmm. or your undergrad. Because when I was in the Vocario Center, I met a lady that she was just taking online classes and she didn't get to network with any classmates or any faculty members. And so by the time she started doing her job search, she didn't have anyone to put down as a reference. Mm. And I said, well, talk to your faculty members. And she was like, I never really got to meet with them. I don't really know them. Okay. Take the time to just meet with your faculty members and get to know them, get to know your classmates, because one day they're going to be your colleagues and you're going to have to lean on them for advice or resources.
Yeah, one of the things I wish I could tell to some of those students that are really focused on A's is that reference letters are more important than grades.
Yes.
do you know what I mean?
And learning is more important than
yeah,
A's.
That's mm-hmm. exactly right. And briefly, and y'all may have heard me tell the story before, but talking about the internship and learning your calling or where you're supposed to be. So when I was, my master's program was paid for by the state of Alabama because I was a child welfare trainee. So I went into child welfare. Mm-hmm. And the first day of my MSW internship, my supervisor at the internship said, now, tell me which populations you're not really comfortable working with. And I thought, because I'm young, this is awesome. Like, she's making sure that I'm comfortable. And so I told her, like, I don't know about people who are, like, seriously and persistently mentally ill. That's an area I'm not super comfortable with. And I'm not real sure about people maybe with intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. I'm not. And I walk in the next day, and the case on my desk is a mom who is schizophrenic. And her IQ is really low. And her two kids are in foster care, right?
Wow.
And so she marched me directly towards the sound of mm-hmm. the cannons, right?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And fast forward 2 years later, I'm the director of a community mental health center working with seriously and persistently mentally ill people. And you know, those are moments you can hear God laugh at you and go, oh, that was real cute, that thing you said you didn't want to do. And the whole time I had this plan for you. So yeah, those internships, you find that things show up that you had no idea. And in so many of those moments, like sitting with someone passing in hospice, right, or going through child welfare and having someone that's having a child that's being taken from their family, and that's scary for them, even though it might be a better situation in the long run for them. In those moments, I always found that God would often show up in those moments, that you could feel how precious and divine those moments were. Mm-hmm. And students will often ask me, Dr. Stanfield, when do you find opportunities to talk about your faith? I tell them, you don't have to look for them. Mm-hmm. They land in your lap all the time. Mm-hmm. That's what I found, because they would always be there, right? Just opportunities to either rely on your faith or to talk about the faith of the person, because it's important to people, right? Their spirituality and their religion is important to people from a variety of perspectives. Mm-hmm. So is there anything that we didn't get to that you wanted to share before we wrap up today? I know y'all both have a luncheon to get to here in a bit.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, likewise. Yeah. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It's a privilege for us in the School of Social Work to have such two wonderful graduates that we get to actually work with on a daily basis as well. Yeah, we just recently relocated closer to y'all. So I feel like gradually social work, we're just taking over the PAC and we have the whole social work thing there. So one last question I do want to ask before we go, because we mentioned confidentiality and things like that. And we mentioned your two offices and what you do, but there's also the counseling center, right? Mm-hmm. So I assume at times maybe the three offices, and there may be other offices I'm not thinking of. I guess Residence Life is another that I assume you guys like sometime coordinate, right, with a student, right?
Esperanza and I speak often with
one
another.
We do, and we're right next to each other. Like, the only, a hallway divides us, right? So I come and knock at her door. What do you think about this, Aaron? So,
I think you are right in that, though, because I can think of multiple conversations I have with Residence Life, multiple conversations I have with counseling. I just think student life in general especially around the director's table, mm-hmm. we all care for one another really well and genuinely enjoy working with one another. I think we've got a real deep trust for and like of each other. So I love our team.
Me too. And just even in a personal level, I remember when my father passed away, Aaron showed up in my house. I was like, how did you know where I lived? Maybe I send you my address. She showed up with this huge like laundry container full of just plastic paper plates and napkins. And I was like, how did she know that I was going to need this? Because I had so many people in my house. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people that you get to work with just to become very special people in your life.
Yeah. That's one of the special things about Union I really find is there's camaraderie within different departments and things like that where you really support each other. And in sharing with the other offices and talking about a student, I can't imagine how supportive that must feel for a student. There's these multiple professionals that really are coming at it from different angles that are working together to support me. Right?
Yes.
And I would just encourage students to, that's part of what those student fees are for, is to support offices like this. So take advantage of these services that are out there. These two wonderful women are ready to help you along with many of other staff in our different offices. And speaking of that big family of student life, y'all have a student life luncheon to get to.
We do.
So we'll wrap up here. I really appreciate y'all being on. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the invite.
It's been great. Thank you.
Maybe we'll have you back on in the future to talk about, we kicked this around before, but today's student or this generation of students and some of the unique challenges they face. So maybe that'll be a future episode for us coming up. So thank y'all so much. Have a great
day. Thank you. You too. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for the first episode of Social Work Calling. If you'd like to learn more about our traditional Bachelor of Social Work program or Adult Studies Bachelor of Social Work program or our Masters of Social Work program, visit us at uusw.info. That's uusw.info. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.